Hello, I'm Dr. Stephen Hassan with another episode of The Influence Continuum, and I have quite an expert to share with my audience today. Ryan Macbeth is someone I've been listening to and following for a long time. Ryan, I heard about you because you contacted me initially, because I think one of your listeners were like, is it like a cult? And it's like, let's ask the cult expert. So anyway, I got into you. For my listeners, I just want to say that you are a fascinating character. I say that with endearment. You're a software architect, a novelist, a triathlete, a YouTuber. You're into cybersecurity, OSINT, which is open source intelligence, military topics. You have an expertise in military topics because yourself are a vet. 20 years in an anti-armor and heavy weapons infantryman with two overseas deployments. You do consultations for government customers, consult with intelligence collection. You have a very popular YouTube, Ryan Macbeth Programming is your YouTube thing, and you have a Substack that people can subscribe to, ryanmacbeth.substack.com, and you're on Twitter, Ryan Macbeth, and Instagram, the real Ryan Macbeth. And I had asked you to be on my podcast a while ago. I apologize for dropping the ball, but I saw your recent thing saying, how did the New York Times get it so wrong? So with that as an intro, how did the New York Times get it wrong? Then we'll circle back to your history and all the interesting things you've been doing.
Absolutely. So the wrong part about the New York Times was essentially there was a hospital in Gaza called the Ali Arbia Hospital, which there was an explosion at that hospital. And essentially, that explosion happened on October 17th, 10 days after the mass terror attack against Israel, 10 days after October 7th.
Yeah, Hamas, for those people who are not on any media at all, they invaded Israel and killed, 1,200 and kidnapped over 400 people. I think 120 are still hostages or something like that. But
that's
this was
right.
A very high-profile blast, and the New York Times said...
The New York Times, when this explosion happened, the New York Times essentially blamed Israel and took Hamas's word that the attack was a strike by Israel, which had killed 500 people. And the issue is that anybody in the intelligence community could have taken a look at the available data. We're not even talking about video. We're talking about just the available data, knowing the composition, disposition, status of forces of people inside Gaza and of soldiers inside Israel, and kind of figure out where this attack came from. And that is not a skill that the New York Times has. So I investigated exactly who works for the New York Times. And what I discovered is that roughly, I think it was 0.33 or 0.31% of the New York Times staff are veterans. And while that may not seem like a big deal, because you don't necessarily have to be an actor to be a theater critic, you don't necessarily have to be a chef to be a restaurant critic, what's missing at the New York Times is this base level of understanding of how the military works. And one example I've given is that if I were to ask you, how many goals does a soccer field have, what would your answer be?
Two,
right? But you probably have kids that played soccer. You probably played soccer. There's a soccer field near your house. So if I were to say to you, no, soccer has four goals, not two. You're being corrupted by the Zionist media. What would you say? Whoa. I've been on a soccer field. I know what soccer is like. There's two goals. And you can say that with confidence because you have a baseline of understanding
right
about soccer. Now, if somebody comes to you and says, this is a war crime, Israel used white phosphorus. White phosphorus is a chemical weapon that is banned by the United Nations, but you don't know anything about the military. You never served in the military. who are you going to believe? It's very easy to be fooled when you don't have a base level of understanding, especially about complex topics such as science or technology, medicine, or even the military, which is a complex topic. There are a lot of people who think that us infantrymen are a bunch of knuckle draggers. And some of us are, but I also have 3 degrees. So not everybody, joins the infantryman, joins the infantry and then spends the rest of their life as a knuckle dragger.
Mm-hmm. So I have my own beef with the New York Times, Ryan, for 47 years as a former cult member, because they have, I've always wondered, is it just ignorance or do they have actual cult members as editors? Because I get interviewed all the time, but it doesn't make it into print. And even yesterday, there was a Sunday New York Times article on Brian Johnson saying that he has this longevity cult and quotes a Vanity Fair article that I was interviewed for and was quoted in, mentions he was raised in the Mormons, but doesn't connect any dots or give any information that could actually inform the reader about what's going on here. And is it just ignorance or is it willful ideological bias? And there's a good question of whether about objectivity in the editorial room, and hopefully they would listen to critics like yourself and at least consult with someone before they publish an article quickly on a controversial thing like that.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath on that one. I don't want to say that there is an ideological bias, because once you start going down that path, you start to show your own bias. And I do work for a company called Veloxity, which holds my security clearance. And Veloxity might have me go talk to a Democratic congressman and give them an intelligence assessment, or they might send me to a Republican congressman and give them an intelligence assessment. And you can't be politically biased in anything you do.
I hear you.
Because you don't want to have any kind of undue influence or make someone think that you're giving them bad information.
Yep.
The intelligence community have to be totally non-political, at least in your public life. I personally wouldn't necessarily go down that road saying that there is an ideological issue with the New York Times, but I have evidence, fact-based evidence, that indicates that veterans are a minority. And some of the veterans that work at the New York Times, they might be working on the loading dock, or they might be in...
sorry for laughing.
They might be... I know one woman was like a podcast engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So how much influence do those people really have over editorial content or reporting content? Now, what I couldn't do was get into the whole process of saying, oh, this person is just a dock worker. Because once you start doing that and judging like the relative importance of people, that you might miss some key indicator that, oh, this person is a graphic designer. Maybe graphic designers really do have a lot of influence as to how a story is presented. So I don't want to take that role. But I can have a scientifically reproducible paper and software that shows, hey, these people seem to have fewer veterans, and it seems like many of their military stories are wrong. Perhaps correlation does equal causation,
right,
in this case.
So I'm a therapist, and I'm a former cult member of a right-wing fascist cult. So I have a bias, and I just think it's easier as an expert witness to admit my bias. And people can judge me. I really went out on a limb by writing the book that's over my shoulder, The Cult of Trump, and alienated a lot of my population of people who would hire me to help a loved one get out of a cult because of the title of the book. And most people who read it understand I'm even-handed in this, but I am biased about it. So, but I respect you and your need to stay a quant and scientifically based. But on another level, and this is another area I've researched extensively, I'm interested in psyops and psychological warfare techniques and disinformation and mimetic warfare, etc. So, and AI and social media. So that's the angle I come from. And I actually did my doctoral dissertation on how to update the law using my BITE model as a scientifically now validated construct for people to be able to say, if you control their behavior, their information, their thoughts, and their feelings, and make them dependent and obedient, you're exerting authoritarian control. And you don't need to be an expert ex-member to go, yeah, if you control behavior, information, thoughts, and emotions, and make people dependent and obedient, you're controlling them.
I suppose you are, but I guess when you think about it, isn't that our entire life? I mean, when I go to the supermarket, I might think I want Cheerios, but I'm looking for that yellow box. That's what I like to eat. When I'm holding a Stanley cup right now, this big water bottle, this thing has been branded. This thing has been marketed to me as a way to quench my thirst.
Right. And that is one of the bigger ones, I might add, for those not watching the video.
I mean, I'll tell you this. People say prostitution was the world's earliest profession. I don't think that's true. The world's earliest profession was marketing, because the first prostitute wasn't a prostitute until she started going around selling her wares.
or a guy just took her wares. But I have an influence continuum that I'm holding up for those who are looking at the YouTube. And I say there's a difference between informed consent and deliberate lying or deliberately withholding information or distorting it. Respecting your ability to ask questions, being used, you know, hate and fear and control. So the model says, this side, BITE, is unethical control. And when you're talking marketing, they know a lot about human psychology and how to unconsciously program people to buy things. But I say it's your mind. You should control it. Understand what you're seeing in these ads and decide if it's really worth paying the extra buck for the name brand when the generic is the exact same product, not with the fancy title. But it's up to you. If you want to spend another dollar, go for it. So anyway, that's my little rant. Back to you. So talk to us about what you see, how you see the world, because you have, 900,000 followers on YouTube now? And
I guess a little over 800,000. How do I see the world?
Yeah, people want to learn from you. So give us a frame that, and maybe we can get some more subscribers to your channel and your Substack.
That's a good question. I guess I see the world as a place of unending knowledge. I'm almost 50, and one thing that kind of surprises me is that one day I'm going to die and I haven't learned everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a lot in my life, and there are people who say, like, how do you know this? How are you able to speak Arabic or know all this stuff? How are you able to be a software engineer and you also do marathons and you also do this and that? Well, you can do a lot in your life if you don't play video games.
Yeah.
Right. I think that...
Guilty. I said, Pac-Man was my last video game.
Okay. So today, there's nothing wrong with video games, but I think that video games taken to an extreme, it gives you, I guess, a false sense of accomplishment. Because if you're playing Fallout and you finally make it to the settlement and you increase the settlement level and now you have settlers living with you, that's great. You had some leisure. You enjoyed yourself doing that thing. But what if you read a book? What if you spent that time learning another language? Like, how much more could you accomplish if you hadn't played that video game? And yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing that. If that's part of your leisure, go for it. But when it kind of becomes what your life is about,
right,
that's kind of an issue. And I've had people who are a lot of people who say you're a phony. How can you know all this stuff? How can you possibly know all this stuff? It's because when I go running, I'm not listening to music. I'm listening to a podcast. I'm listening to a book. When I exercise, I'm listening to a podcast. I'm listening to a book. While I'm cooking dinner, I'm listening to a book. I work probably 13 to 16 hours a day and I never stop.
Yeah. Like, so we're very similar, you and I, because I love to learn and I feel I'm almost 70, but I feel like I get smarter. And the smarter I get, the more I realize how little I know and how much more there is to learn. So I love to learn.
There's a lot to learn. And I kind of feel like, you know, a lot of the world is so big and there is so much to learn. And one of the smartest things someone ever told me was the director of talent for Newsmax. She gave me this piece of advice when Newsmax hired me as an intelligence consultant and a military commentator. The director of talent said, when you are on camera, you need to think about how you're going to present this information to a woman who's worked all day and is trying to make lunches for her kids and is half listening to the TV. And that one piece of advice, Valerie was her name. That piece of advice was golden. Because what it allowed me to do was understand that I have 20 seconds to get a very complex point across to an audience that's half listening. And I think just that piece of advice made me so much better as a communicator of very complex topics.
I'm so, dying to know what's the trick that you learned? Because to me, somebody recently said, Steve, you have 3 slides to explain what you want people to know. What are those 3 slides? And I'm like, I haven't a clue. I know the first one might be that I got recruited into a cult and I experienced what it's like to be brainwashed and come out of it. But I have so much more that I want to explain. I don't know how I can talk about the influence continuum and bite model, but that doesn't even touch the base of it.
Well, I think the trick is to edit and edit and edit until you have a very good quotable sentence that someone can repeat at a party, or if they're talking to their friend at the dog park while their kid is playing on the swing set. Uh-huh. I guess one recent example is regarding the Houthis in Yemen. And we had recently struck the Houthis in Yemen. And my quote for that was, when a dog bites you, do you go after the dog or do you go after the owner? Well, who's the owner of the Houthis?
Iran.
Well, that would be Iran.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, you know, you gotta.
So you use analogies. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. I need your help, Ryan. I need to set up a consultation with you, buddy, I've only been in the media for 47 years, but I haven't mastered what I think I could. I mean, the closest thing I've gotten to is it's your mind and only you should control it.
Yeah. Well, one of the workers at Velocity, the company that I've done some intelligence work for, they called me the Neil deGrasse Tyson of intelligence. And I like that, because when when there's a new satellite, there's a new constellation discovered or a new star or something, they bring Neil deGrasse Tyson out and he does this whole, the importance of this star. Yeah. So I wanted to be the guy that could be rolled out and say, well, the reason tank turrets pop off their hulls is that Russian tanks have all of their ammunition in a circular magazine underneath the hull. So when the hull is penetrated, the turret pops off like you've squeezed a Pringles can too hard. And
love it.
Boom. Now everybody knows. So that was kind of my goal there, to be like Neil deGrasse Tyson and be able to explain complex topics very easily to people. While at the same time, not thinking that they're
That's fantastic. I recently saw deGrasse Tyson crediting his mentor, Carl Sagan, who said, come to my, you know, come to the college and I'll give you a tour myself. And I always thought of Carl Sagan as like introducing the idea of the cosmos and how human history is this and we're the last second showing sapiens showing up is like the last second of the universe history and such. But I love that. And I think obviously you're doing something right. So kudos to you. And if you're not even 50 and you're the Neil deGrasse Tyson of military open source intelligence, I'm honored to have you on my podcast.
That's very kind of you to say.
Yeah. So let's circle back to, because right now the world seems so chaotic. So much information, disinformation, deep fakes, AI, all of this, and people saying whichever government gets AI the best is going to win the whole planet and such. What's your thoughts on AI and such?
That's a good question. So I work for a company right now called the Texas Aeromed Lab, which wants to send whole blood products to wounded soldiers in the field using AI-powered drones. I know a little bit about AI. I am not too worried about AI waking up and killing us all like the Terminator. I do think that AI can be used to complement military actions. And I'll tell you this, people who are afraid of AI don't look at the Patriot system and don't look at the Aegis system.
What is the Patriot, meaning the missile system?
The Patriot missile system. Yeah. So Patriot is a surface-to-air missile system. It's owned by, it was developed in the U.S. It's in the service of a number of nations. And Aegis is a battle management system that is on Navy destroyers, specifically Aegis-class destroyers, although we have a couple of old cruisers that have the Aegis system as well. This system has essentially been in operation since the 1980s, and the system is totally automated with the idea that when incoming Russian missiles are inbound, and I have to remember, back in the 80s, we thought there was going to be a war with Russia eventually. And we were going to have to get National Guard troops from their staging areas on the East Coast all the way across the Atlantic Ocean, France, or to Belgium, and offload the Netherlands, and offload them and get them into the fight in Germany. That was going to take about 30 days to do. So we had to perform this very dangerous ocean crossing with Russian backfire bombers throwing missiles at us the whole route through. So we needed a way to cut through those missiles. And that way was the Aegis system, which is essentially an automated supercomputer that is floating on a boat that is AI powered. It can identify missiles that are incoming. It can automatically target those incoming missiles to shoot those missiles down. It can network with other systems in the fleet so that they're not sending more than two missiles at the same target, so you're not doubling your efforts. And we've had that since the 1980s. So it is certainly a force multiplier.
Right.
We've had killer robots for years. This really isn't anything new. And if is the first country that gets AI going to dominate? I think it depends on what you mean by dominate. I certainly think that AI has the opportunity to improve the OD, the decision cycle, the OODA loop. Is my God, I can't remember the darn name of that acronym for the military decision-making cycle, but the whole idea behind that specific decision cycle, you want to get inside the enemy's decision cycle and either force them to make bad decisions or put roadblocks up in the way of the enemy making decisions, or force them to react to you rather than you react to them. And AI might be good at doing something like you plan to perform an attack. You have your objective. You know what forces you want to use. You know what kind of weapons you want to use for this particular attack. You might put all of that into an AI and tell the AI, okay, write the operations order.
Mm-hmm.
And the AI comes up with a standard American or standard NATO five-paragraph operations order. And this five-paragraph operations order is every single soldier in the Army knows what this thing does. And it's a standard template on how to perform any kind of military action.
Mm-hmm.
So you might give the AI all this information, and the AI does in seconds what would take an Army officer hours to do.
Right.
And that gets you inside the enemy's decision loop.
Right.
Right there. Some people think that you might be able to use AI to estimate where the enemy is. We can do that now.
Yeah.
I'm actually a big proponent of using thermals on tanks. Equipping thermals on tanks with AI in order to constantly scan for targets while soldiers are manually servicing targets. So I'm not saying
okay,
that...
Okay, for my listeners who are not experienced military tacticians, what is thermals, where you can tell body heat of soldiers inside of tanks?
You can look at the heat coming off of the tank or coming off the person. You'd be able... Every tank has its own thermal signature, and you can tell what kind of tank something is because, okay, well, this engine is over here. The engine exhaust is over here. The road wheels heat up at a certain rate because the road wheels that run the tracks are separated at a certain distance. So they're each going to have a different thermal profile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you can do manually by looking at a tank and just knowing. That's your intuition. But a computer can do that much faster and much more efficiently.
Right.
And so while the gunner is engaging targets and the commander is telling that soldier what targets to engage, the AI software can just draw boxes around those targets and say, hey, you might want to take a look at this thing right here.
And so you want to fire at the most vulnerable part of the tank, I would assume.
That's an interesting one because I've corrected people on that before. On tanks, there's no like weak spot like in the movies where, oh, if you hit by this bolt right here.
I see.
Generally on tanks, the front part is the most armored. The sides have less armor. The rear has even less armor. And so does the top and the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, the weak part is on the side or in the rear. And most soldiers know that that's where you want to go for a kill shot if you're able to do so.
Got it. Fascinating. So I can't help but go into my expertise for 1 minute with you, if you don't mind, and just say it seems to me like information warfare is been escalated where kinetic warfare is taking place, the actual combat. But there's so much going on now, and the U.S. has no data privacy protection for its citizens. We have no regulation on social media. We have bad actors saying, America needs free speech. We can't say, you know, anything against anyone who says we should take guns and kill everybody who doesn't agree with us. And I disagree. I'm in the world of undue influence, and I don't want to see Americans killing Americans because Russia is doing cyber hacking of our brains, or China is, or Iran is. So that's what makes me a little bit crazy that, you know, the only solution that I can tell if we can't get a top-down solution is educating everybody how vulnerable our minds are. And
I think you're right. I think free speech is a good idea.
Yep, me too.
I have had people run ideas by me of restricting speech or requiring that people who post online have their real names or use their real names. I don't see that as a solution, especially because there are some circumstances where anonymity is very useful. If you're a kid who's just kind of discovering their sexuality and you want to kind of figure out what you're all about, you might not want to use your name while asking questions about certain things.
Yep.
And that's that God, 30 years ago, people who felt different had to suffer in silence, right? And now at least there is a community, an online community.
1,000%
that can guide them through that process. I think the answer is to educate everybody. When we were born into this, for the most part, many people in America were born into this democracy.
Yep.
And part of the responsibility for living in this democracy is eternal vigilance.
Yep.
And it is education.
Yep.
You want to be that informed voter. So I think that perhaps we have slipped a bit when it comes to civics. Maybe in addition to the standard kind of civics where we talk about this is the Supreme Court, this is the executive, legislative, judicial, whatever.
Yes.
Maybe we also need an online component where we say, here is how you can identify what might be misinformation. I don't want to live in a country where our internet is restricted because the government doesn't think they can trust us.
Right.
I think that you've brought a couple of books to my attention, but I know one book was called The Wisdom of Crowds, mm-hmm. which basically said that on the whole, people tend to get it right when it comes to making complex decisions.
Yep.
And I think that there is a wisdom of crowds component here, but I'm also in favor of kinetic action against inauthentic actors.
Right.
And that meaning if there are people who are foreign actors that are performing disinformation, well, then we need to consider them a combatant.
Right. So I just want to comment. There's a book, famous book called The Madness of Crowds 2, which is the contagion effect of, faux viruses or whatever, where there's really not a virus. But I guess what I want to say is, because I'm part of a forensic think tank at Harvard Medical School, so I've been doing a deep dive in understanding the law and wanting to update the law. And the law has a principle that says it's a crime to call fire in a crowded theater because of the high potential that people will get hurt. If there's a fire in the theater, it's your obligation to cry fire, or at least to say, let's move to the exit as quickly as we can because I smell smoke. But the point is when Michael Flynn or other people that I hear are saying, Alex Jones, we need our AR-15s because we have to get ready to kill all of the evil trafficking Democrats. In the UK, they arrest people who are calling for jihad and to do mass violence on people to protect the public. And I just think we should have free speech, but there needs to be an idea of community standards of responsibility to be honest and accurate and not just make up things like there's a trafficking chain at the bottom of Comet Pizza, and the guy shows up with a rifle, and there's no basement. It was Pizzagate back a ways. I just feel like we need some rules and some guidelines that make sense, where we have maximum capacity to air opinions, but not where we're calling to kill people that Americans. Fellow Americans who differ politically from us.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of anything like that happening, but I would certainly believe that any kind of terrorist laws would help prevent something like that. And one of the things that I've discovered doing research on misinformation is that lying is protected speech. There's no rule that you can't lie about something, or if you lie about something, your freedom of speech is not protected. And also don't forget that you might have freedom of speech, but that freedom of speech is freedom of reprisals from the government. And you could certainly look at someone like Alex Jones, who I believe is now being sued or won a judgment against him.
Oh, $1 billion. If he was putting forth Sandy Hook was a phony and they were actors and no children died.
So freedom of speech might mean that you can say whatever you want without reprisals from the government, but that does not mean freedom of consequence.
Yeah.
So sometimes these problems have a way of working their own way out.
Well, using civil lawsuits, you mean?
There are ways of getting to the bottom of things, but you have to trust the legal system. You have to trust the process. And the idea of a government minder kind of looking over my shoulder, or an AI looking over my shoulder, watching everything I type, which actually is happening now, but is being done to serve me ads.
Right.
The idea of a government minder looking over my shoulder as I type a message into a box, that I don't like that idea.
No, I agree with you 100%. And when I hear Donald Trump saying if he gets into the White House, he's going to use the DOJ to go after people who are opponents to him, and I wrote The Cult of Trump for Simon & Schuster, I'm a little bit nervous about that idea.
I can see why you might be nervous. I've yet to read your book. I don't recall the president saying anything like that, but
recently he has been saying just that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I don't
the former
tend
president,
to get into
Donald Trump,
news.
Not President Biden.
That would be interesting. I'd have to research that. That's certainly, a very inflammatory thing to say.
Yep.
And, but I unfortunately, that's not something I can really converse about.
No problem.
I'm unaware of its accuracy.
Nope. But I wanted to feature you, Ryan, and your expertise, because I think you have a very valuable role to play to educate the public about military stuff and intelligence stuff. So, I'm still thinking about your comment about, do you go after the dog or the owner? Like, I love that. That is so spot on.
Yeah, I mean, it everything, you know, one of the big issues is that so few people have served in the military. Mm. I think it's between 6% and relatively recently 0.5%, at least veterans of the global war on terror. So few people have served in the military that base level of knowledge just isn't there.
Yeah.
And we have all of these veterans who have come out into the population who can do all sorts of amazing things if they're just kind of given a chance to do these amazing things. And it's this resource that we're just kind of wasting.
Yeah.
And that's a resource that could be used to help educate the public. And I've often said to people, I got some flack for talking about this on Destiny stream. Destiny is this video gamer, and I think he's known in liberal circles as a person who debates conservatives. And I went on his show, and Destiny said, like, what's one misconception about the military that you would want to dispel while you're here? And I said, my misconception is the misconception I want to dispel is that you shouldn't join the military.
Mm.
Consider it an option. if you want to save lives every day and do some amazing stuff, join the Coast Guard. We need people to pull boaters out of wrecks, to stop the cartels from getting drugs to our border. We need people to do that. We need people to defend America through cybersecurity in the Air Force.
Yep.
And we need people to kick in doors in the Army and the Marine Corps.
Yep.
And it is a noble profession. And there were actually some people who got upset with me for saying that, as if they didn't really understand exactly where their freedom came from.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And in fact, I'm about to interview a man who grew up in Scientology, who became a helicopter gunship pilot, served 20 years, and he thanks the military and thinks that any analogies to the military as a authoritarian cult is like totally wrong. And so we're going to be doing that interview. And if I may just cycle back to something you talked about just a few moments ago about civics education, I interviewed Louise Dubay of iCivics.org, because you were talking about educating people online. There's an organization that Sandra Day O'Connor actually set up, former Supreme Court Justice. She and Louise granted me an interview. It will be coming out shortly on my channel. And she's doing great work. And there are like 9 million children a year are getting educated about how government works and how to get involved, even locally in government, and to develop a consciousness that it's based on the notion of community and taking care of each other, not greed and like, how much money can I make by going into, you know, public office? You know, how can I rip off, you know, contractors or whatever? It's like, no, this is service to the greater cause and greater good.
Do people really think that? Do people really think, how much money can I make if I enter public office?
I can only guess there's a few people who have no credentials, who've gotten into political office that are not, have no basis of ethics in their past.
Okay.
One of whom just got kicked out of Congress, named Santos.
Yeah, that guy, he seemed a little shady.
A little?
I didn't pay that much attention to it. He seemed a little shady, and it was just kind of like, what's the next grift? I mean, when you're bragging about being a producer for Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark, like, maybe you ought to brag about being a producer for a successful musical. Like, I'm not really sure.
No,
it's kind of a weird flex there. But actually, I wouldn't be surprised if most people enter government with the intention of doing the right thing, and just after a while they kind of realize, like, wow, the salary here sucks. Maybe I can trade some stocks ahead of the knowledge that I have we're going to pass this law. And you do that long enough, pretty soon it becomes a right.
Yeah.
It becomes a norm. I have a friend of mine who is the boss media in a school district, and there is this one employee that she has who she doesn't show up for work. She doesn't do her work when she is at work. She always has an excuse. And this woman just recently took over this department, and it struck me that the previous boss had maybe been very lenient. You know, you lived in this environment for 10 years. So then when a new person comes in, they want to shake things up and they're making you work. Right. I can see how you might go into panic mode. Like, oh my God, I have to work now.
Right.
So I could certainly see a politician roll into office, and you know, the first couple of years they go, all right, I'm going to do what's good for the country. And then they hit the wall, where the majority whip or the minority whip comes to them and says, hey, this is how we're going to do things. You can like it or you can not like it. So all their thoughts, I'm going to change the world, that runs right into the majority whip or the minority whip, and you gotta toe the party line or you're not going to get reelected.
Right? Yeah, my take is
that,
it's more a little bit more nefarious than that, because there are paid lobbyists. Like, Putin spent $100 million over 10 years in a DC PR firm, hiring lobbyists to take out politicians and offer them this and offer them that. And what we know from our form of government, there needs to be checks and balances. And when you take those checks off, like, you can't be a lobbyist for X number of years after you leave office, there used to be a law that you couldn't, and that got taken away. So that just incentivized people Facebook has 1,500 lobbyists or some ridiculous number, full-time lobbyists.
I wasn't aware of that. I know that John Bonner, when he left his position as Speaker of the House, he went to work for a cannabis company, which I thought was kind of interesting. he is a smoker. That was one thing I liked about John Bonner. We both agreed that there should be indoor smoking in the White House cloakroom. but he went to, I know, you should be able to smoke indoors like a civilized person, but.
Well, I interviewed.
I know I'm on the wrong side of history with that one.
Dr. Peter Grinspoon on his book about debunking the myths of medical marijuana. And I just read last night that there was a federal study saying that we should decriminalize it nationally.
What was the book implying that medical marijuana was not beneficial?
No, it was saying that it was, you know, that it's gotten a bad rap compared to alcohol, that it has many more therapeutic uses. Peter's father was a Harvard psychiatrist who wrote a book called Marijuana Reconsidered in 1971, very controversial. But Peter's brother had leukemia, and smoking pot was the only thing that decreased the nausea from the chemo so he could eat. And his father was like, we gotta reconsider this. There's a beneficial use here. There's a therapeutic use here.
Well, that certainly goes into the whole idea of using actual hard evidence-based data versus things that you've personally experienced. And I've never done that stuff. You're talking to a guy who does triathlons.
Right. So
there's a reason that I do that. I need the pain. Right.
But I'm serious. Smoke cigars. Like, that's not good for your lungs, you athlete.
No,
I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you.
I live a very cushy life. So I might work 13, 16 hours a day, but I'm not working 13, 16 hours a day at the mill, right? I'm sitting down and I'm talking to you and I'm using my brain and I'm typing.
Yeah.
And I think that getting us out of our comfort zone and making us run in the cold or do something you don't want to do, like do a half Ironman, you know, go 70.3 miles, whether you want to or, you know, like,
right.
that is not a normal thing to want to do.
Right.
So creating that level of pain in my life, I think it is a way of reminding me that my life is pretty darn cushy.
It's cushy, but it's also
a medical reason why I do this or a psychological reason, but that's my reason. Like, I need that pain. I need that striving, that suffering.
Well, I think the striving is the piece and the discipline to say, you know what, I'm going to make a goal I want to push my limits get soft. I think that's very valuable.
In my experience, one of the things I've noticed about people who smoke marijuana, even people who, you know, claim to smoke medical marijuana, and I've dated girls who they smoke marijuana or they vape marijuana, and the excuse, it helps with my paranoia, or it helps with
helps
my
with your
anxiety.
Paranoia usually makes you more paranoid. And I thought
I wouldn't know, but I think that for a lot of people that's really an excuse to smoke marijuana because they like getting high. And if you like getting high, just admit you like getting high. Don't try to kind of hide it with other excuses.
Right.
There may certainly be evidence-based research that medical marijuana is good for you or helps in certain cases. The idea of a leukemia patient or a cancer patient who can't smoke, who can only eat after they smoke marijuana, and I don't know the physiological reason for why you want to eat after smoking marijuana, but if that helps them, I see no reason why you shouldn't. But I'm also fairly libertarian when it comes to if you want to do drugs, it's your body.
Mm-hmm.
Go do drugs.
Yeah.
You're not making me do drugs.
Right.
That doesn't mean you should get in an airplane afterwards.
Right.
I've advocated that one of the things that we should do with our military is decriminalize or legalize the use of marijuana.
Mm.
If a soldier wants to get high after his shift is over, as long as he's not within 8 hours of flying or 8 hours of the duty day, whatever the military determines is the appropriate number, just treat it like alcohol. Go back to your room, go get high, or go take a gummy to help you sleep. I have no problem with that. It's not something I would personally do, but I believe that is one of the reasons why America is in a recruitment crisis right now.
Mm.
People like to get high. And that's not something you're going to be able to do in the military unless we change some of our rules.
Yeah. So I'll just say that Richard Nixon had a whole scientific panel that in the 70s said marijuana should be decriminalized. It's not that bad. And he just said, no, I don't like the results. So, and but there was literally another report that came out about this. But there's also, if you're young, if you know, having a there was just a report about psychosis in young people, yeah, talking about how marijuana has gotten 20 times stronger than it was in the 70s or 80s. And there's a difference between a little bit and like a lot, and a lot can make you crazy.
Well, it's like video games, right? you want to go play, if you want to, look, you worked all week, you want to go play, you want to go play Madden on Friday after work, order some wings, play Madden, that's fine. When you're playing Madden every day, that can be a problem, right? And I guess because marijuana makes you feel good, you might certainly want to do more of it.
Yeah.
And I did read, I believe I read that article in the Wall Street Journal, yeah, about
the psychosis of young people. Paranoid. We need, yeah, more science and what's healthy and what's not healthy. And some things within limits is okay. And then more limits is not okay on the human body. But I want to circle back to your call for recruitment and how honorable it is to join the military, to serve others, the benefits. A lot of people get expertise from being inside the military to get training, et cetera. And the notion of civics, that we're part of a greater whole, and that, you know, part of the human experience is we're not an island, and that we owe an obligation to people in our community and in our country to think of the country and not just my party. And I've interviewed a bunch of people who are just like, I just want to come back to the basics of the Constitution and rule of law and common decency and not doing to others what you don't want done to yourself. And respectful disagreement, if you have intellectual conversation and just, you know, discuss it and consider changing your mind if the evidence is there, and not just, well, I've always been this way, so I'm going to stick to my guns. It's like, why? And I'll just say one more thing, if you don't mind. It's just like, there's so much change happening. I think the future is going to be with people who are flexible, resilient, open to new ideas, and not people who are just like, we need to do it the old way or else.
I'm old enough to remember that Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan were friends.
Me too.
They were friends.
Yeah.
And I'm old enough to remember I'm old enough to remember Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale debating, where Reagan said, I will not let my opponent's youth and inexperience be a factor in this election.
I remember that.
And Mondale laughed at that. Yeah. He thought that was funny. Okay, you got me, Reagan. Yeah. You got me on that one. And I don't really have a solution for this other than civics-based education, and maybe we need to stop thinking about politics as a team-based sport.
Mm.
If you look at, when I grew up, my dad was an Eagles fan. I think it's probably one of the reasons I don't really watch football.
Philadelphia Eagles fan?
Philadelphia Eagles. Oh. My dad was an Eagles fan, and my dad would go to the games, and he would tailgate, and he once missed my birthday because there's an Eagles game. And when I've told that story to other Eagles fans, they've gone, so?
I have a good friend, Hoyt Richards, who's an Eagles fan.
Hundreds of birthdays. Right. There's plenty of birthdays. It's a game. At least 17 of these every year.
That's funny.
So, I remember growing up an Eagles fan, and I saw, look, I can tell you this. I will tell you today, and this is a treat for all your listeners, why Chris Christie will never become president. I'll tell you why today.
Because he dropped out.
He is a Dallas Cowboys fan. And he grew up, he's roughly the same age as me. He grew up in the old Roger Staubach era. I probably had a picture of Roger Staubach on his wall, autograph poster or something like that, right? So he grew up a Cowboys fan in New Jersey. And I don't think there is anyone more hated in New Jersey than a Cowboys fan. So that's how. So now you've got every single Jets, Giants, and Eagles fan absolutely refusing to vote for you because you tried to high-five Jimmy Johnson at a game once, and there is a picture of you missing that high-five. So that's how people. That's how rabid people are about their teams, about being on team. I am on Team Jets. I am on Team Eagles. I am on Team Giants. Right, to the point where they might not vote for someone they might like otherwise because he likes a different team. And I look at stuff now where you have some politicians who seem to be doing this not necessarily for the benefit of the country, but for the benefit of the team.
Yes.
And there's always been that in a certain sense. I mean, when you look at voting back in the 1800s, there was a question as to whether government provided ballots were even constitutional. You used to go to the newspaper if you're a Democrat, you got the Democrat Sun Sentinel. If you're a Republican, you got the Republican Daily Mail. Mm. And you would clip out the ticket. You'd vote the ticket. That was the ticket that was wow. in the actual newspaper. You'd cut that out. You'd drop that in the ballot box. That was your ballot.
Wow.
Right? So that was a team sport back then. I'm actually doing a video on how soldiers voted in elections. There was actually a bit of misinformation that was spread about about Ukraine. Mm. Someone had said that Ukraine banned, or Zelensky banned elections. This man is a tyrant. If you look at Ukraine's constitution, only took me less than a minute to look up the rule. Article, I believe it was 83 or 86, the Ukrainian constitution is that they can't hold elections during martial law. And they have been re-establishing martial law every 90 days in Ukraine in order to keep the saboteurs and foreign agents, in order to create special rules to go after the saboteurs and foreign agents. So they literally can't have an election.
Right.
Right. But it made me wonder, like, all right, well, how did we do an election back in World War II? In World War II, there were African-American soldiers who were under Jim Crow who had to pay poll taxes.
Yeah.
Based on their state. Well, how do you pay a poll tax when you're out in the middle of the Pacific?
Right.
Or when you're in North Africa?
Right.
How do you do that?
Good point.
Or even back during the Civil War, there was a huge issue. And from what I understand, in 1844, I believe, Maryland was a slave state during the Civil War, but they were on the Union side.
Hmm.
And there was a bill to abolish slavery in the state. And the bill failed until all the absentee ballots came back from soldiers who were serving in the military, in the Maryland militias.
Interesting.
Who were fighting for freedom.
Yeah.
And that bill, which they thought had been had failed, actually passed
yeah.
due to all those soldiers and their military ballots getting back. So that's a fascinating little. This should be a good
it
video.
Is, it is fascinating, and I can't let you go without commenting since you brought up Ukraine. I mean, mm-hmm. I just really, really, really am concerned about Putin. I just really see him as a demagogue and a cult leader and a dangerous actor. And I see Americans wearing I Love Russia t-shirts. And I'm like, their minds have been hacked. Like Americans siding with Vladimir Putin.
I've never seen that personally. I know that there are some people that Putin appeals to the authoritarian side, but authoritarian in the right way, meaning there might be some people who believe that the U.S. has kind of lost its way as a white Christian nation, or as a predominantly white, predominantly
right,
Christian,
Christian nationalists in particular.
Non-Christians in this country,
yeah.
But as long as they couldn't really develop any power.
Mm.
Right, so there might be people who kind of feel that way, and they look at Russia and they go, "Well, it's predominantly Orthodox, so there are more Muslims in Russia than there are in the U.S. It's predominantly Orthodox. It's predominantly family values, predominantly traditional values. At least that's what they think. But then you look at all of the work that women do outside the home. You look at how abortion is actually one of their preferred methods of birth control in Russia.
Yep.
They kind of,
and no gun rights in Russia. You get arrested if you have a bullet and you're not part of the military.
There are some gun rights in Russia, from what I understand. But it's almost, I believe the thing is that you can own a rifle, and then if you own a rifle for 5 years, and you can put in a thing for a handgun. It's more restricted than it is in the U.S. But there are certainly ways of and actually, even during communist Russia, from what I understand, there were the people who lived in Siberia had access to weapons. Just because you can't argue with a bear, right? you can't teach the bear Marxist theory. You have to shoot it, right? So there were some gun rights, at least in Siberia, but it was of course heavily restricted.
Right.
In fact, there's even gun rights in Iran. That's one of the things that I found out when I was doing research during after Mahsa Amini was murdered. That you can own guns in Iran, but for the most part, it's farmers and hunters mm-hmm. in the rural areas. And when you shoot, you need to bring every shell casing back to the police, and the police will give you a permit to one for one. And if a shell casing is missing, you better have a good excuse as to why that shell casing is missing. But
that's interesting. That's
one reason. If you want to take a look at America's Second Amendment, you know. If you look at Iran, you wonder, why do they have laws like that? Well, after Mahsa Amini was murdered, you probably would have seen the Iranians rise up if they had access to weapons. Mm. And I've taken a look at countries like Venezuela, where they banned weapons just a couple of years ago, or 3 days after Castro took power in Cuba, one of his deputies said, can we keep our weapons? And Castro said, arma pourquoi? Weapons for what? We have the revolution. You don't need weapons anymore.
Right.
Authoritarian states will always come up with ways of preventing that. But yeah, when you look at some people who support Russia, I think the authoritarianism, the religion, the idea of traditional family values appeals very much to them. And I think they also might look at President Putin, and they might look at our current president, and they might see a disparity of strength.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have a president who, I think President Biden has addressed the nation twice in his time in office. And, if that had been Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan would have been on TV. Well, we're going to support Ukraine no matter what happens. he would have gone on the news, or he would have had a special event, and he would have explained, hey, this is why we need to support Ukraine. And the only time President Biden ever did that was Israel. And I think that perhaps he's not the greatest communicator. So he might have lost a lot of people because he just can't communicate why America needs to do this, that, or the other. And of course, there's also people who are just internet edgelords. They just love to be contrarian. You know, if you say motherhood is nice, they'll motherhood is horrible. Puppies are cute. Puppies are awful. They poop all over. There's just people who want to watch the world burn, and they think it's cool to like.
Yeah, I have to name Bannon and Stone and Jones wanting the world to burn. But anyway, I'm biased. We're going to wrap up. Any last words? Ryan Macbeth, fascinating person. And thank you for
I really appreciate it. I guess my last words would be just be careful of the media you consume. Be careful of what you share. And if something gives you a very emotional feeling when you read it online, you might be being manipulated.
Definitely. Always, I say pause before you share. And like read it, check the sources, breathe, don't react. Because they want polarization. They want people to be overwhelmed and confused and uncertain, because it sets them up for authoritarian manipulation, in my opinion. So I just want to say again, if you're on YouTube, and almost everyone is, it's Ryan Macbeth Programming is your Ryan Macbeth, and ryanmacbeth.substack.com is your your newsletter, and you're on Twitter at Ryan Macbeth and Instagram and Threads at The Real Ryan Macbeth. Thanks so much.
Steven, thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I really appreciate your time. You must have a very smart audience because I didn't understand half the things you said.
I invite us to have a future conversation offline, and check out my books if you want, and we can talk again. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Steve.
Bye. That's it for today's episode of The Influence Continuum. I've been your host, Dr. Steven Hassan. Theme music for the podcast is by Nasser Malik. To keep up to date with me and happenings that I think are important, please visit my website at freedomofmind.com. There you'll find in-depth articles about cults, mind control, and other relevant topics. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at cultexpert. If you want to develop a comprehensive understanding of these topics, I highly recommend my books, Combating Cult Mind Control, Freedom of Mind, and The Cult of Trump, in that order. These books are a culmination of 45 plus years of experience and will really help you grasp the complex web of undue influence. I have also launched a new 9-hour online course for anyone interested in a deep dive into issues related to recovering from undue influence in all forms. While this course is designed for clinicians, everyone can benefit. Remember, love is stronger than mind control. And thanks for listening.